And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. This is Uncle Dennis live in the studio on the 13th of August, 2015. Wanted to ask you to make sure you had a pencil and paper handy because there's lots of information in the Earth First Update that you might want to refer to later. Names, addresses, telephone numbers, URLs, web pages, you name it, email addresses. Something you might want to act on later, because that's what this show is about, action. Unfortunately, I have to start off with an announcement that's happens occasionally in the environmental world, but we have to tell you about it. Wendell Wood, fierce defender of Oregon's wild, has died, and we're saddened by the news this week of the passing of Wendell Wood, a dogged advocate for the protection of the Pacific Northwest wild places for more than 40 years. He was a former biology teacher who helped found Oregon Wild and a frequent Center for Biological Diversity partner and for protection of Oregon's wolves, salmon, salamanders, mollusks, and marbled murrelets. The center was working with Wendell this summer to secure Endangered Species Act protection for the silvery Passelia, a beautiful coastal sand dune flower, but he died on Tuesday while hiking in the redwood forests that were dear to his heart. Quote, Wendell was an indefatigable warrior for the protection of nature. Countless stretches of Oregon's ancient forests still stand tall today because of Wendell Wood. He was instrumental in securing protection for the western snowy plover, the Lost River sucker, the Klamath short-nosed sucker, and many other species. Wildlife and wild places have lost a very dear advocate, said the Center for Public Lands director of the Center for Biological Diversity, Randy Spivak. And sad to hear that one. Some more upbeat news. California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team is having a habitat restoration this Saturday, August 15th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's going to be at Baldwin Creek in the Wilder Ranch State Park. Back to this sweet spot on the North Coast for a follow-up on wild mustard and Cape ivy removal. Meet at Wilder, and they will carpool to Baldwin Creek. See you on Saturday. Linda writes, four directions to the Wilder Ranch. Take Highway 1 west through Santa Cruz and then continue north to the turnoff on the left-hand side for Wilder Ranch. Watch for the sign indicating a left turn. Once you're at the kiosk, let the person there know that you are volunteering as a habitat restoration team member. You'll get a parking pass and meet the group by the interpretive sign by the bathrooms in the parking lot, and they will carpool up to Baldwin Creek. Please arrive promptly at 10 a.m. The Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Please wear comfortable layered clothing. Bring something to drink and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. But if things get particularly shiny on Saturday, they'll call it a day. It might be warm, but then again, it might be windy. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and your water. If you need more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. You could email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at packbell.net, or visit the webpage at www.cruzcnps.org. That's CRUZCNPS.org. And here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field. Although it's summer and most buffalo are deep within the relative safety of Yellowstone National Park, Buffalo Field Campaign remains incredibly busy in our work to protect this iconic species. As you'll see below, we've been advocating for the buffalo, protecting habitat, organizing events, cutting firewood for the coming winter, distributing our latest newsletter, and submitting official comments on issues affecting the bison. At a time of year when donations are down, all of these activities take a heavy toll on our budget. While there are lots of ways for you to help with each of these initiatives, your financial support can help keep the campaign strong, vibrant, and effective. Whether you give $5, $5,000, or $5 million, each and every contribution is essential to our continued work. If you donate $5 million, I'm sure Mike will be your very best friend. Thank you for playing such a crucial role in the work of the Buffalo Field campaign. And if you do donate $5 million, tell them Dennis told you to do it. To permanently protect America's only continuously wild bison population. This year's Speak for the Wolves event in West Yellowstone, Montana was a wonderful success. Great minds and passionate hearts gathered on behalf of our wild relatives. We were among many of our heroes, got to put faces to names, reconnected with old friends, and made very many new ones. Incredible presentations were given, including Oliver Starr, who spoke devotedly about the wolves of Denali, who were being shot along the borders of the national park. Brian Ertz of Wildlands Defense gave an eloquent and impassioned account of the McKittrick policy, which has been altered so it protects humans who mistakenly kill endangered species from suffering any consequences. The incredible journalist Christopher Ketchum shared a brief but intense story about Echo, the wolf who made it all the way to the Grand Canyon only to be shot 3 months later on her journey back north, having been mistaken for a coyote by a known anti-wolf hunter. Anti-livestock author George Werther and Camilla Fox from the Center for Biological Diversity helped educate folks about the brutal predator-killing contests that are running amok in our country. Our very own and extremely charismatic Mike Mees, co-founder of the Buffalo Field Campaign, shared stories about the buffalo, showed some of our footage from the field, and encouraged us all to work together and stop the infighting that is harming our already too small environmental community. And Natalie Ertz of Wildlands Defense and Ron Coronado of Wolf Patrol demonstrated how to release an animal from a leg hold trap. There were many other wonderful presenters, lots of great question and answer sessions, important films, and incredible opportunities to do some serious networking. Many huge heartfelt thanks go to Brett Haverstick of Friends of the Clearwater, who has started the Speak for the Wolves conferences. He put so much work into pulling this event together, and it was a grand success. We also must thank Brett for inviting Wild Buffalo and the Buffalo Field Campaign to participate in this event, which is largely for wild canids. Solidarity. Last week, the volunteers here at the Buffalo Field Campaign teamed up with members of the West Yellowstone community to remove an old barbed wire fence from the Horse Butte Peninsula, favorite spring habitat and calving grounds of wild buffalo. The removal of the fence allows unimpeded access for bison and other wildlife to move to other lands where they are safe from harassment or hunting. Thanks to Buffalo Field Campaign's Buffalo Safe Zone signs and the help of local buffalo-friendly landowners. It was an incredibly rewarding experience to reach out to the community, and also a great feeling to know we were helping free the land, prevent wildlife injuries, and allowing more bison to reach safe zones. Please join the Buffalo Field Campaign for their annual Woodcut Week, coming up August 31st through September 4th. It's a lot of fun and a lot of work. Please join us at our headquarters near West Yellowstone as we haul, cut, and stack the wood that will keep our field volunteers warm this winter. And I have to say that I've watched Mike Mees cut firewood, and it's a sight to behold. You might want to help him. We will provide a place to stay and tasty meals. Please contact the Buffalo Field Campaign if you are interested in helping with Woodcut Week, August 31st through September 4th. And the Buffalo Field Campaign can be reached with donations at P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, the zip code 59758. Their phone number, in case you have any questions, is area code 406-646-0070. And you can find out this and all the information about the Buffalo Campaign at their website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. Their yearly newsletter just came out, and they have calendars and all kinds of stuff available. Once again, that's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And the Sea Shepherd crew have been found guilty by a Danish court of defending pilot whales. Recently, the Netherlands-based marine conservation charity Sea Shepherd Global and five Sea Shepherd volunteer crew members were found guilty in a Danish court of breaking the Faroe Islands Pilot Whaling Act. All parties also face a subsequent conviction of public disturbance. Let's hope so. The volunteers are facing charges relating to the crime of interfering in the slaughter of over 250 pilot whales on the killing beaches of Bjor and Torshavn in the Faroe Islands on July 23rd. During the trial, which took place earlier this week, the prosecution also implicated Sea Shepherd Global in the offense. Sea Shepherd land team leader Rosie Kunick of South Africa and fellow Sea Shepherd volunteer Christophe Bondu of Belgium were arrested on the beach of Bjor, where 111 pilot whales were slaughtered. Kunick has been ordered to pay a fine of 35,000 kroner, approximately 5,000 euros, or spend 14 days in jail. I think she'll take the free food. Bondu has been ordered to pay a fine of 25,000 kroner, approximately 3,500 euros, or also spend 14 days in jail. I think she'll probably take the food, too. Javier Figuerella of Corsica, France, and Mariana Baldo of Italy were arrested as they attempted to document the Bjor slaughter from their tender, a small boat. Both have been ordered to pay a fine of 30,000 kroner, approximately 4,000 euros, or spend 14 days in jail. Kevin Schlitz of Luxembourg was arrested later that day at the second slaughter in Torshavn, where 142 pilot whales were slaughtered. Schlitz has been ordered to pay a fine of 5,000 kroner, approximately 670 euros, or spend 8 days in jail. Sea Shepherd Global has also been fined 75,000 kroner, approximately 10,000 euros, for allegedly orchestrating the incidents that led to the crew members' arrests, although the organization steadfastly denies any wrongdoing. Authorities in the Faroe Islands will also keep possession of the tender, which was used by Figuerella and Baldo on July 23rd. At the trial, Kunicki refused to enter a plea and has since stated, "I did not enter a plea because I do not recognize the Faroese Pilot Whaling Act as a legitimate law. Denmark is a signatory state of the Berne Convention. Denmark's support of the Grundrap runs against the sentiments of its obligations under this convention, as do our arrests, which were undertaken by police officers who are officially part of Denmark's national police force, and our trial in this court, which is officially a part of the Danish legal system. The slaughter of cetaceans is outlawed throughout the European Union, including Denmark, in accordance with Appendix 2 of the Convention on the Conservation of European Wildlife and Natural Habitats, the Berne Convention. However, in the Faroe Islands, the slaughter of pilot whales and other small cetaceans continues with the assistance of the Danish police force and navy, and with the blessing of the Danish government." CEO of Sea Shepherd Global, Alex Cornelissen, stated, "Sea Shepherd's mandate is to uphold international environmental law as provided for under the United Nations World Charter for Nature. We have no intention of paying this ridiculous excessive fine, which undermines the very laws that this organization is positioned to uphold. We challenge Denmark's right to order Sea Shepherd to pay a fine for interfering against the slaughter of pilot whales, an act which is itself illegal in Denmark." Deputy Chief Prosecutor is now attempting to deport the five volunteers from the Faroe Islands. Appeals are currently being lodged in relation to all charges. A total of seven Sea Shepherd crew members from seven different countries have been arrested in the Faroe Islands since July 20th. All are facing charges relating to breaches of the Pilot Whaling Act. Susan Larson of the United States and Tom Strerith of Germany were also arrested on July 20th. Following an attempted Grundrap near Klaksvik in the northeast of the archipelago, Larson has been allowed to return to the United States following a preliminary hearing. Strerith remains in the Faroe Islands, his passport confiscated by local authorities. A follow-up court date for the pair has yet to be scheduled. Sea Shepherd has been leading opposition to the Grinda Drop since the early 1980s and is currently in the Faroe Islands for the organization's sixth pilot whale defense campaign, Operation Sleipnir Grindini. And in case you're wondering what a Grinda Drop is, it is a mass slaughter of whales. A military and police board the last two toothfish poaching vessels in Cabo Verde. Military and police have boarded the last two Interpol wanted toothfish poaching vessels, Sung Hwa and Yong Ding, in Cabo Verde, an archipelago state off the northwest coast of Africa. The action took place thanks to intelligence provided to international law enforcement by Sea Shepherd, which has been gathered 2 days prior in a remarkable set of chance circumstances. While on Wednesday, May 20th, at approximately 1500 local time, while in Cabo Verde on unrelated business, Captain Peter Hammerstedt of Sea Shepherd happened upon a vessel that was at anchorage in Mindelo, São Vicente, that appeared to him to be remarkably like the wanted poaching vessel Song Hua. Captain Hammerstedt forwarded photographs of the vessel, which at the time was carrying the name Kade and flagged to Sierra Leone, to the New Zealand Ministry for Primary Industries. The ministry, which has been involved in ongoing investigations into the Song Hua, was able to confirm that this was in fact the outlawed vessel. Shortly after, Sea Shepherd crew members stationed in Cabo Verde noticed the arrival of a second vessel in Mindelo, which had pulled into port alongside the Song Hua. The vessel, which was carrying the name Luampa and also flagged to Sierra Leone, was later identified as the other wanted poacher, Yong Ding. The Song Hua and Yong Ding are two of six active, illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing vessels that have been blacklisted for poaching Patagonian and Antarctic toothfish in the waters of Antarctica. The six vessels, which Sea Shepherd calls the Bandit Six, have been the target of the organization's most recent Southern Ocean defense campaign, Operation Icefish, led by Captain Hammerstedt and Captain Sid Chakravarti. Both vessels have a long and well-documented history of fisheries crimes and are suspected to have links to known Spanish crime syndicates, the Vidal Armadores. In January this year, the New Zealand Navy intercepted the Song Hua and the Yong Ding, along with a third vessel, the Kunlun, after they were found fishing illegally in waters west of the Ross Sea in Antarctica. The vessels were subsequently issued with Interpol purple notices following a petition to Interpol from the New Zealand government. Then in January, the Yong Ding was again intercepted, this time by the Sea Shepherd ship Sam Simon, inside Australia's exclusive economic zone in possession of prohibited fishing gear. The location of the Song Hua, however, has remained unknown until this time. All six of the IUU vessels have been the target of Operation Icefish have been located, and four are completely out of action. Since March, authorities in Southeast Asia have detained three of the vessels, the Kunlun, the Viking, and most recently the Perlon. On April 6th, the most notorious of the outlaw vessels, the Thunder, was scuttled by its own captain and officers in the waters of Sao Tome and Principe off the west coast of Africa following a 4.5-month pursuit by the Sea Shepherd ship Bob Barker. Authorities in Sao Tome and Principe are still holding the captain, chief engineer, and duty engineer of the Thunder as investigations continue. Captains Hammerstedt and Chakravarti have called on authorities to ensure that the outlawed vessels are detained in Cabo Verde and the captain and officers of the vessels are fully investigated. We are now looking at the very real prospect of being able to completely rid the Southern Ocean of the Bandit Six for good. We urge all relevant authorities to take advantage of this opportunity to fully investigate the Song Hua and the Yong Ding to ensure that those behind the operations are held accountable for the repeated fishing offenses and that the vessels are detained, thereby eliminating any possibility they will be used in further illegal operations in Antarctica, said Captain Hammerstedt. The success of Operation Icefish clearly demonstrate that Sea Shepherd's arsenal in the fight against poaching extends far beyond high seas patrols. We have the tools and the experience required to eradicate IUU fishing operations from the Southern Ocean. With the welcomed cooperation from law enforcement authorities, coordinated by the expertise of the Environmental Crime Unit of Interpol, that's exactly what we will do, said Captain Chakravarti. Operation Icefish was Sea Shepherd's 11th Southern Ocean defense campaign and the first to target IUU fishing operators in the waters of Antarctica. And here in the United States, anglers were caught with 676 fish over the limit. And the story by the editors of Wired to Fish. A party of six adults and six children were allegedly found with 676 fish over the Minnesota legal limit. After an anonymous tip, Minnesota Department of Natural Resource officers allegedly discovered a 12-person fishing party to be in possession of 676 fish over the state's legal limit. The anglers were fishing on Upper Cormorant Lake, and the fish, a mixture of crappie and sunfish, were found filleted and frozen in 25-quart freezer bags inside the freezers located in two separate cabins at End of the Road Resort. According to Department of Natural Resource Conservation Officer Bill Landmark, one freezer held 295 fish over the limit, while the other freezer in a separate cabin held 381 fish over the limit. Officers counted each fish and counted two fillets as one fish. The six adults had the appropriate non-resident fishing licenses, but the six children did not. When reached by phone, one of the anglers, 78-year-old Clifford Emmons of Bedford, Indiana, didn't have much to say. "What's there to say? We took too many fish." The adults were charged with misdemeanors and ordered to appear in court on August 31st. If convicted, they will pay $3,380 in restitution in addition to any additional fines or legal action. No word about the six children. And California has banned bobcat trapping. The California Fish and Game Commission has voted 3-2 to ban bobcat trapping in California. In a close vote, the scores of thoughtful and passionate comments by supporters of the ban made the difference. As Commissioner Williams stated before his vote, "It's clear to me after today's testimony, it will be very difficult for me not to vote for a statewide ban." Thank you to EPIC members, that's the Environmental Protection Information Center, who swarmed the commission meeting. Supporters of the ban outnumbered trappers and their lobbyists 10-1. Thank you to EPIC members who could not attend but signed our petition. Your comments were delivered by Madrone Shelton, the precocious 3-year-old son of EPIC's conservation advocate Amber Shelton. Banning bobcat trapping is just the first step in ensuring that California's predators are protected. The commission also accepted a petition from EPIC to protect the Humboldt Martin under the California Endangered Species Act, and EPIC presented a scientific review in support of protecting the northern spotted owl under the California Endangered Species Act. For more information, go to www.wildcalifornia.com. And another turkey vulture has been found poisoned by a euthanasia drug, and the really rehabilitated raptor will return to the wild, thankfully. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife recently confirmed another turkey vulture was poisoned by the euthanasia drug pentobarbital. It was found near Inverness in Marin County and taken to the wildlife hospital operated by the nonprofit WildCare in San Rafael. The massive bird with a 6-foot wingspan has since recovered and will be released, or I guess was released, on Tuesday, August 11th. In 2014, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife confirmed pentobarbital exposure in 6 turkey vultures in San Rafael. The source of the exposure remains unknown. Those birds were also taken to WildCare, a CDFW-approved wildlife rehabilitator. Wildlife officials are concerned the recent admission of another pentobarbital poisoned vulture to WildCare indicates that more animals are at risk. Anyone with information about the possible sources of pentobarbital-contaminated animals should contact the California Department of Fish and Wildlife at area code 916-358-2954. Pentobarbital is a drug used by veterinarians to euthanize companion animals, livestock, and horses. If animals are euthanized with pentobarbital and the remains are not properly disposed of, scavenging wildlife such as turkey vultures and eagles can be poisoned. Veterinarians and animal owners are responsible for disposing of animal remains properly by legal methods such as cremation or deep burial. Turkey vultures are protected by the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act and the California Fish and Game Code. Improperly disposed of euthanized remains are a danger to all scavenging wildlife. California Department of Fish and Wildlife asks members of the veterinary and livestock communities to share this information with colleagues to prevent additional poisonings. WildCare also asks the public to pay attention to grounded turkey vultures and other raptors and scavengers. Pentobarbital-poisoned birds appear to be dead. They have no reflex response and breathing can barely be detected. The birds appear intact without wounds or obvious trauma. Anyone finding a comatose vulture should call WildCare's 24-hour hotline at 415-456-SAVE. That's 415-456-7283 immediately. And you can read more about one barbital poisoned turkey vulture patient and the astonishing medical intervention required to save its life at www.wildcarebayarea.org/vulture. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented live every Thursday evening right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. If you want to hear a rebroadcast of this show, tune in tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Or if you're in Moscow, Idaho, tune in to Radio Free Moscow 90.3 KRFP at 9:30 on Monday nights. And you can also hear download a podcast or listen online at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, for all.net. And radioforall.net and Free Radio Santa Cruz depend upon your donations to keep going, so support both Radio for All and Free Radio Santa Cruz. Free Radio Santa Cruz is currently looking for a new studio, so if you have an idea where we could move to before October 1st, please let us know. That's FRSC at freakradio.org. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week at 9 o'clock on a Thursday night for another edition of the Earth First Update.